Hi, and welcome to That's My First Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
How has your past week been?
Pretty chill week. I went to a convention this past weekend, Fan Expo Dallas, and it was a lot of fun. I actually cosplayed. I mean, you know I cosplay. I guess the listeners don't know. I do like to dress up for a convention. I think it's just a lot of fun. I broke out an old costume, but a good go-to, and that's Barf from Spaceballs.
Yes, I remember. I know you've had that one for a while, haven't you?
Yes, it's just people just love it, and it's like just a jumpsuit kind of thing, so very easy to put on. So I enjoyed it. I'm a big Spaceballs fan. I'm a big Mel Brooks fan. So going out there, then people being like, "Oh, it's Barf from Spaceballs," you get to see like it's not just older people that enjoy it, even though it's an older movie. You see some younger people be like, "Oh, I love this movie too." So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can't even remember the last time I saw that movie. I do agree with you on the Mel Brooks stuff. Like, Mel Brooks films are just genius, to say the least. I don't think I've seen any of his films like in a long time. I can't even tell you the last time I saw one.
Well, I mean, I watch Spaceballs pretty regularly. Not like all the time. I would say maybe once every few months I watch it. Now I'm like brain fart. Oh, The Producers.
That's a classic. That is a classic.
Oh, Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, that one was a very good one.
No, I can't think of any others. You know what? After we finish this, it's going to like all come back to me. Or people are like yelling at their whatever they're listening to this on. There's so many great ones you forgot.
I was going to say Robin Hood Men in Tights comes to mind.
Oh! Yeah, that's a good one too.
History of the World. Those are only the two other ones I can think of. I think he's been out of the game for a while, which is fine. You know, it's all right to just do that. I think there's a lot of actors and other Hollywood types who after a while just remove themselves from it because they're just like, I did everything I need to do. Or they just are like, oh, you know, I'm fine with being a background person and producing or directing and stuff, but not being in the limelight.
Yeah, I think like, you know, you do some really great movies and you're like, it's time to leave. And there's nothing wrong with that. Go out on top, right?
Might as well. You don't want to be one of those actors who, like, overstays their welcome, if you will. There are quite a few actors who do that, sadly. And I think, like, then you just don't remember them fondly because the last few projects of theirs that you remember are terrible. Like, I don't know. I'd put, like, Eddie Murphy in that bucket. Like, I feel like the 80s and 90s movies he made were just genius. And then after that, they were all just disappointing. And like now it's like, oh, who are, I don't know. It's like, it's like, man, you remember when Eddie Murphy was good? Yeah. Remember when he made Coming to America and the sequel, and then he made Norbit and then the second Nutty Professor and what was that one? Like the one that's always described as like one of the worst. Oh, Pluto Nash, The Adventures of Pluto Nash, stuff like that. Like now everybody just remembers him for those things.
Do you think Pluto Nash is worse than Norbit?
I think so. Like I think a lot of people say Pluto Nash lost a ton of money.
Oh man, I can watch Pluto Nash. Like Norbit is hard to watch.
Well, let's see what Rotten Tomatoes has to say. So Pluto Nash is 4%, Norbit is 9%. So just edging it out.
Oh man, those percentages.
It's like he's winning, but by a hair.
Man, oh, but The Nutty Professor, that first one. I watched it all the time growing up.
The first one was indeed genius.
Because were people doing it back then? Like, playing all, well, I guess Martin, or who, Martin Short, no, Dana Carvey.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like Eddie Murphy was the first to, like, I'm playing every character in this movie, basically.
Eddie Murphy, like, made it cool, I guess you could say. Because, like, yeah, I think a few people did do it in the past, but it was seen as kind of gimmicky. But now that he's, like, when he brought it to, it seemed like, oh, an actual thing that could be done.
Wait, so there was a Nutty Professor, and then was there a Nutty Professor 2? And then the Clumps movie, or was...
No, Nutty Professor 2, like,
the... was the Clumps.
Yeah, that's the, what is it? The tagline was Nutty Professor 2, Meet the Clumps.
Okay. For some reason, I thought there was just, like, a Clumps movie.
No, there wasn't. There was the sequel, and it was... I can't even remember it, but I think he found... It just tells you how long it's been since I've seen it. I think he found a way to, like, make Buddy a completely separate person or something, but then it resulted in some kind of brain drain on him to where he started to become stupid.
Oh, man. Jane Jackson was in...
Yeah, have you ever heard of the song Doesn't Really Matter? It was like from 2000-2001 by Janet Jackson. Like, she made that song for The Nutty Professor 2. Oh.
This cast is interesting. Wanda Sykes, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's about...
Yeah, but you don't see many people doing that anymore these days, like where you have one actor playing... like seven people.
No.
Which might be a good or bad thing. I don't know.
If anyone I want to do that now, it's going to be like Jason Statham.
He can only play one person, and that's Jason Statham.
But yeah, but we put wigs on him. And I feel like that's the... accomplishment.
I guess, yeah. See, he's one of those actors that I can only see doing, like, one role. Like, every movie, he's Jason Statham in every movie. It doesn't matter what film you put him in.
Can you imagine, like, I'm just seeing in The Nutty Professor, the dinner scene, but it's all him, just in different costumes.
Mm-hmm. That would be pretty funny.
I feel like Jimmy Fallon could have done it back in the day.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't think so now, but I mean, maybe like right after SNL.
Yeah, I think now he's too, like, what's the word I'm looking for? He's too sterile in a lot of ways. Like, I feel like that's kind of the side effect of hosting The Tonight Show. You become super, like, sterile and clean, and it's hard to imagine you doing anything really after that.
Oh my gosh. You know who I... Who was the SNL cast member? He would like do Bill Clinton.
Oh, Daryl Hammond.
Yes, he would be good at it.
He might be. I mean, I've always liked him as a... In the movies there and all the works he's done. He has a wide berth of characters he can do. Same thing with, like, Jay Farrow. They can have him doing, like, you know, when he was on SNL and he did, like, the, not the rapper convention, but he did, like, the secret black comedians meeting or whatever, and he did, like, the voices of all the comedians.
Oh, yeah. Was that on a Weekend Update?
Yeah, it was on a Weekend Update.
Okay, yeah.
And then, like, he ends up saying, and then Bernie Mac was there. And he was like, wait, Bernie Mac was there? And he's like, okay, you got me. I'm making it all up. Yeah, because Bernie Mac's been like, God rest his soul, has been dead for like 10 years.
Ah, what a, like, I love me some Bernie Mac too.
But yeah, that was funny. Like, that's when Dave Chappelle hosted, I think Jay Farrell was already off the show. I might be wrong. But I was like, when Dave Chappelle hosted, I wanted them to bring Jay Farrell back just so that he could do a present Dave Chappelle impression. It's like the one sketch they do where Kevin Hart goes to meet with like an old flame played by Leslie Jones. And he's like, you've got a son. And then what's his face? Jay Farrell does Kevin Hart impression directly to him. And so they just both have like the same mannerisms and jokes.
Oh man. I love when when they have a guest host or they bring someone on that a cast member is impersonating.
Yeah.
It's just a great. I don't know if you remember this. Excuse me. But Will Ferrell used to do Janet Reno's dance party.
Yes.
And then one episode Janet Reno came in and I was just like, this is me as a child, not even into politics, but I was like, Janet Reno must be awesome because of the skit.
Yeah, I forget. Like, I think, if I remember correctly, I read, like, a behind the scenes or something like that, like, how some of the most excellent scenes were made, and apparently there was just, like, something Will Ferrell came up with. Like, there was nothing about Janet Reno's character or personality to make you think that she would throw a dance party, but, and that's exactly why he created the sketch, because he just thought it was so ridiculous to think about Janet Reno throwing dance parties.
Oh, man. Like, I always feel, I feel this more now than before, but like, SNL has become really political now. There's a lot of political sketches, but back then it just felt like they sprinkled them in and they made them so absurd, like Janet Reno's dance party.
I don't know, like all the Clinton stuff that happened in the 2000s, in the 90s were on SNL all the time. Like, I feel like you couldn't move an inch or whatever without hearing something about Monica Lewinsky or Linda Tripp or whatever. Not even just on SNL, just in general.
I don't know. For some reason, it feels more now, but maybe that's just because I'm more in the world.
I think now. That's probably it. I think because we're older and we, like, comprehend stuff better, now it makes more sense.
But Janet Reno dance party. I remember as a child, like, if that skit was coming on, I was just like in love with it. Will Ferrell, great cast member.
Yes, he's one of my favorites of all time, at least in recent years, if you will. I'm trying to think of other ones who are some of my favorites, but yeah, he's definitely like a top for me. But yeah, then. I guess before we jump into the podcast, my weekend was mundane, like always. I did go to a meetup, but I got on the wrong bus, so I was like half an hour late. So I think, and I was the organizer, so I think like everybody just assumed that I ditched or whatever and left.
Wait, so when did you realize you got on the wrong bus?
Well, it wasn't even that. It was I was waiting for the wrong bus because, like, the way that, like, we have the underground rail here in San Francisco, and then we also have, like, buses and stuff. So it told me to get on the certain rail, and then I thought, or the certain number, and I thought, oh, that's a, like, looking at the map, I was like, oh, that's a bus. So I'm just standing at the bus stop, and like 25 minutes passed, and I'm like, why hasn't the bus stopped yet? And then I decide to look, and I look, oh, I'm supposed to be underground. So.
Oh, man. And I bet you're already like, oh, that feeling of when you're late, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I cannot imagine.
Other than that, I just enjoyed the time off, played with the dog, all that stuff.
Always great.
Yeah, but I also watched King of the Hill, which is something I mean, let's be honest, I do that all the time, but I also did it just for fun and for this podcast. So let's jump into this one. A Man Without a Country Club. This is oh gosh, it's like season six, I want to say. And it is pretty, it is pretty good because it's a very concentric one, if you will. And I think it kind of goes a little bit more into his psyche and whatnot. Also, I feel like it's completely unrealistic just virtue of the fact the whole thing is based on the idea that there's like a country club in Hamlet County, which it's not a real county, but all indications seem to point to the fact that it is a very like rural or small county, but apparently they have like this whole golf course that's just like Asian people, which is just, I don't know. I feel like the demographics in Hamlet County wouldn't be there, but who knows? I might be wrong. I might be proven wrong. I'm all right with that.
It feels not just Asian people, but like a lot of them are Laotian.
Yeah. Well, they also mention all the different Asian people that are there. And I'm like, I honestly wondered if like any Asians had anything to do with writing this, because like they kind of wrote down the idea that like, oh, they're all Asians and Asians like each other and Asians are Asians and stuff. So like, you know, it's all these different kinds of Asians at this country club who are liking each other. And I'm like, I've been around different kinds of Asians that I don't necessarily think they like each other in that way. I don't know. I don't see a bunch of, and granted, maybe it's a necessary thing, like because they're the only ones of that demographic in the area, they create like a necessary alliance or something. But yeah, it's like, I just don't see a lot of like, you know, Chinese immigrants and Korean immigrants wanting to hang out, like not in mass like that anyway, but I could be wrong. You know, I could be wrong. That's just been my observation. It's even like a Russell Peters joke where he talks about how white people get a bad rap for being racist, because like nobody can be as racist as us. He's talking about Indians and Asians, and he's like, because we don't even like each other. It's like, you know, you'll see a white guy who's like, oh, where are you from? Montana? And I'm from Kentucky. Oh, let's go have a beer. Whereas like an Indian will be like, oh, where are you from? Are you from India? What part? Oh, no, not that part. You get away from me. So
yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But I do know that this episode has, anytime I think of King of the Hill, I think of a joke in this episode. And I'll let you know when we get to it.
Yes, there are quite a few good ones.
This one I always think of.
Yeah, so. Well, let's jump to it then. So the episode starts in Ink's backyard. All the guys are kind of prepping for a golf game or something. You know, they're just kind of standing around. Boomhauer's bouncing his ball on the club, and he hits Bill in the head. And Bill just, like, looks around and is like, oh, what's that? And he kind of looks in the complete opposite direction of where Boomhauer is, which is kind of funny because it also just shows how not bright Bill is. Hank comes out. He's been on the phone with all the public courts, and they're just all booked because apparently the PGA Tour is coming to Nine Rivers Country Club. And because of that, everybody all of a sudden has decided that they're a golfer and is wanting to get their golf game in. And then they think, well, why don't we have our own putting green? And Bill's like, I don't know. I mean, that'll be a lot of extra care, extra mowing and watering and fertilizer. It's like our whole life will be lawn care, which only makes Hank happier. And so they agree to do that. They finally set it up. They jump forward a few days or whatever. And they have it set up. And, you know, Dale's doing kind of the, is kind of doing the dedication to it. And Peggy is like, well, I've been asking for a batting cage since we moved here. And then Bobby puts up the little hush sign because Hank tells her to do, Hank tells him to do so. Con shows up on the other side of the fence and he makes fun of their little redneck field and asks them how many food stamps it took for them to make it. And Hank retorts like, well, it's better than the one that you have. Oh, wait, you don't have one, do you? And then, you know, I guess Dale looks in the back and it's like, now I see a hammock, a trampoline, a shed, a built-in grill, but nope, no golf course. And Con's like, oh, why would I need that? I'm joining Nine Rivers. I will be sitting in enjoying the game with Tiger Woods. And, you know, he talks about the fourth hole and he just kind of describes it because it's the signature hole at Nine Rivers Country Club. And the guys start fantasizing and Khan snaps them out of it. But then they're like, you know what? We could probably replicate the fourth hole here. Like, you know, the alley might as well be a big ravine and we could treat, we could treat Khan's house like a sand trap because nothing that goes in there is coming out. And Boomhauer is like 176 feet away. So that's about the distance. So, like, he's all figured it out. So now they're going to turn the whole alley into the fourth hole. Khan is back at his house and he is upset now because he lied about joining Nine Rivers Country Club because apparently they've been turned down six times. And the last time they were turned down, they didn't even send in an application. And it's the only all-Asian country club in Hamlet County. And so they figure, well, let's invite Ted Wasanasong to wine and dine him. And he can have us join because he's on the membership committee. So they figure, well, we'll go through, you know, a non-official channel to get ourselves in. So, I think we're starting to learn more about Hank liking golf because I don't think we see Hank golf all that much in the show. I honestly don't not have a total count of how many times he does, but I know it's not that often.
I feel like this is the first time that we get the glimpse into Hank's thing. Every time I think of Hank's golfing thing, I think of that episode where they get him the clubs from the murder.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think there's probably four or five episodes where they really reference him golfing, and that's about it. But yeah, and it also, you know, I guess the lie everybody all of a sudden becomes a golfer because of the pub, because of Tiger Woods. I don't really think it would be that popular, but I guess so. I guess you can rent clubs or whatever. I'm just thinking, do you just have clubs in the garage that you're never using? And then all of a sudden PGA comes through and now you're like, oh, let me go to the public course and dust off my clubs and all that stuff.
I guess so. I've only been golfing like real golfing maybe twice in my life. So I don't know. I don't have that much experience with it. I have been to this thing called, oh, now I don't remember what it was called. But basically, it's like a big kind of golfing range looking thing. But on the ground, it's like lit up. Man, now that I can't remember it.
Topgolf?
Topgolf, yes. Yeah, I've been to Topgolf a whole bunch of times. But that's not like real golf. That's like video game golf. Even though it does have a real ball and club. It's like leisure.
I think it's been well over 10 years since the last time I stepped foot on a actual 18-hole golf course. But, you know, it's not that I don't want. It's not for me. I've done it. It was fun. It was all right. But it's not like something I'm eager to do. But I guess it's something Hank and the guys want to do. And it's kind of funny because I think they're in the same kind of boat. And I think they also kind of allude to it that they're only interested in golfing right now because of the PGA. But hey, they go all the way to actually creating like a putting green in their yard and then, of course, extending it to being an entire golf hole.
I mean, I love the ingenuity. I think it's really cool thinking like they're like, well, we can just recreate it here. And they have the like tools to do it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one of the big things about Hank that we see in the show all the time is that he is very, very, he just likes building stuff and he likes little projects and all that. So I think, like, him having the opportunity to do this golf thing would really made him happy. And then, of course, Khan brags about belonging to this golf course. Turns out it's not true. I think one thing we kind of constantly see in the show is Khan just trying to create an air of superiority over the hills, either to make them feel, I don't even know if it's necessarily to make them feel worse as much as it is to make him feel better. But then apparently he just made himself feel worse because he was like, oh man, not only am I not in Nine Rivers, but every time I apply, they reject us. But now they're going to try to wine and dine. A few fun things happen when the guys are golfing before we jump into the con. So, like, at first, Dale is like, hey, if I hit the ball and then it's grabbed by a bird, and the larger bird grabs that bird and then drops the ball into the hole, is that a hole in one? And then Hank's like, it only happened once. What are the odds that it's going to happen again? And then, of course, we see another point where Bill, I guess, they're using, like, the as kind of like bunkers, or I guess that's a proper term. They're using the garbage cans. Is that so? I guess a garbage or a ball fell into one of the garbage cans. So we just see Bill standing in the garbage can and swinging, but obviously the ball's just like ricocheting off the edge of the can and not going anywhere. So then we just hear Dale say like eight and just counting down all the swings. So we see Khan's house, Ted and his wife pull up, and they're, you know, Ted's upset. Like, why couldn't you just say we had to pick up our uncle from the airport? You could clearly tell that they do not want to go have dinner. At the very least, Ted doesn't. But then his wife is like, oh, well, you know, we've been banning Chain from dating Connie, and this is a good way to remind ourselves why. Which is kind of a funny thing, because of, you know, we know that Con would love for Connie to be with Chain. But anyway, Con and Min, as we could expect, are really super nice and kissing up and everything. And they're really trying to, like, make it look like they're richer than they are. Like, at one point, Ted is like, oh, well, the alarm in my Mercedes is on the fritz. Is it safe for me to park on the street, or should you move your car and let me park in the garage? And, you know, Con's like, oh, well, the only crime here is the rise in taxes due to soaring property values. And then they're inside, Con's saying, oh, I heard a funny joke. Takes place at Nine Rivers. And Ted's like, oh, we're members there. And then he's like, yeah. And then Ted's like, well, what's the joke? And he's like, oh, well, Min's the big joke teller in the family. And Min's like, oh, well, man walks into the bar. It's Con. He is so successful. Oh, wait, that wasn't a joke. That actually happened. I mean, they're really trying to get them. They make him filet mignon. They take him out to the lanai to have drinks and some Cohiba cigars and all that. And, you know, he gives a bunch of the cigars to Ted. And it's like, yeah, we can go and smoke this at your private humidor in Nine Rivers. And it's like, oh, that's, you know, for members only. And then Khan's like, ah, I see where this is going. And then he's like, it'd be my honor if, and then all of a sudden a golf ball comes and breaks the glass, and Khan gets super mad, runs out to see the hills, and is like, hey, you broke this. You need to go to Williams-Sonoma and get another one. Hank's just like, it was just an accident. And Dale's like, if you didn't want this stuff to happen, you shouldn't have bought a house on a golf course. Which is, okay, that's a very Dale response. And then Ted shows up, and Con's like, oh, you know, these hillbillies tried to make a crass replica of the fourth hole. And Ted is like, you know, you need to do this move or whatever if you're going to golf to make it against this wind. And, you know, Hank's like, oh, I didn't know a lot of people could do that, do a shot like that. And, you know, they kind of hit it off with Ted a little bit. And Ted offers Hank a cigar, and Hank's like, oh, don't mind if I, and he looks at it, he's like, oh, he probably didn't know this, but this is Cupid. I'll go ahead and destroy it. And then Ted kind of laughs and invites Hank to Nine Rivers and tells him to bring a friend. And they get 9 o'clock tea time for the next day. And then Ted and Cindy leave, and they just say bye to Con, but they don't offer him a time to play. And as they're walking to their car, they're talking about how they finally found their white guy and how Hank is super white. I think that my favorite thing of this part is the fact that it just, you can tell that it's just angering Con, because he wants, you know, on one hand, he has a superiority complex. He wants to believe that he's better than his neighbors. Like, you know, he lives in the exact same neighborhood as everybody else and stuff, but he still has this need to pretend that he is somehow better than the rest of them. And then to have Ted Wasanasong invite not him, but Hank, a guy he doesn't even know, really just, you can see how it eats up at him.
I don't know. I always find this fascinating about Ted, that he's kind of a jerk just in general, but he's like a really great businessman. you know, he sees Hank and automatically is like, I need Hank to join. And he's like, it's kind of like the reverse of like what Khan's doing to him. He's kind of like small, like way schmoozing Hank, giving him like the golf tips and the cigar and stuff like that. I love what Hank does with the cigar. It's hilarious, but
it is, at least at this point, it is a little less obvious. Like Khan kissing, but like is super obvious. You could tell that he's trying to, and I'm sure Ted and Cindy with Sonosong picked up on it, but it's a little less, it's a little more discreet when Ted's doing it to Hank. Hank's with all of his friends, and you know, Dale's like, oh man, if I'm gonna go golfing at a fancy smancy club, I better sew a pom pom in my hat. And Bill's like, I've never golfed with a caddy before, I'm gonna treat him like crap. And then Hank's like, well, Ted said I could bring a friend. He enunciates very well. And so Dale hits Bill and says, well, Bill's out. And Hank's like, I haven't decided who I'm going to take you to. So far, I'm leaning towards Boomhauer. And then he's like, but Boomhauer has an injury. And he acts like he's getting ready to swing at Boomhauer. And Hank does the whole, I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 10. And then Dale yells out 3. And Hank's like, yes. And Dale's like, yes, he always chooses 3, except for when he chooses 5. Next day, we're at Nine Rivers. And Hank, you know, gets out and he looks around. He's just so pleased to see everything. Dale drops Khan off because Dale has to make an unexpected deposit at the bank. Khan apparently bribed Dale to be able to play. And, of course, Dale, you know, that's just who he is. Ted's a little upset because he didn't bring, you know, they brought Khan, he didn't bring one of the other white guys, or as he said, the two skinny guys or the fat one. But you know, I guess he's just like, okay, this is what it is. And so then he thinks, okay, well, let's get you to the locker room and you can change into your clothes. And he's like, well, these are my clothes. It's like, oh, well, my mistake. We have a dress code here. No jeans, no shirts, or no t-shirts rather. And you know, Khan's like, oh, Ted's a powerful man, but he can't change the rules. This is very embarrassing. You should go. And Ted's like, nonsense. I'll set you up at the pro shop. My treat. They meet their fourth, who is a man named Mr. Ho, and he's the chairman of the membership committee. They are speaking to each other in Chinese, they being Ted and Mr. Ho. And Hank's like, what do they say? And then Khan's like, they're speaking Chinese. How should I know? Do I look Chinese to you? But anyway, they're like, let's play golf. And they play golf. And Hank does his first hit, and he does a great job. And then Khan goes up to do his hit, but he just, like, digs up a bunch of sod. They make it to the fourth hole, and Hank's about to shoot off tee off. Hank's about to tee off. And then Khan does, like, the cough talk of hillbilly. And that gets Hank upset. He's just like, dang it. Dang it. And then Mr. Ho's like, oh, I think he's too emotional to be Nine Rivers material. And Ted's like, I've got this under control. And he pulls Khan aside. He says, do you want to be a member of Nine Rivers? And he's like, oh, yes, thank you. Well, you can forget it unless you could show Mr. Ho that Hank would be the perfect member. And Khan's like, well, why are you guys trying to get, why are you guys trying so hard to get him? And they're like, well, the PGA said if we don't get one non-Asian member of our club, they will pull out of they'll pull the PGA tournament out of Nine Rivers. We tried to tell them that Mr. Chong was Hawaiian, but that wasn't good enough. so they agree to give Khan the membership, and if things go well with Hank, so his membership is totally dependent. And so Hank does a second hit, and Khan yells out hole in one, and Hank's like, it didn't even go in, and this is my second swing. And Khan's just really buttering him up and everything. And yeah, so they're just having a ball. Or Hank's finally golfing at a really nice place. And back there at the other place, at the home, everybody is golfing. And Bill's like, oh, I hate Hank. And he's with his fancy friends and stuff. Oh, I wish he was back. And Dale just calls Bill a doormat. So yeah, we see how desperate Khan is to get in. I mean, he bribed Dale. You know, he definitely had to swallow his pride on that one.
I don't know. I don't know if Khan has pride when it comes to getting this done. I do love the like bait and switch of Dale coming up, and then it's like Khan comes out. I always find that hilarious.
Yeah. Yes, he is very... yeah, because he still drives up, and then he just says, oh, Hank, yes, I cannot make it because of unexpected delivery or an unexpected bank deposit. And then it just drops off Khan.
I also love that the PGA is just like, you just need one non-Asian member.
Yeah, it's also kind of weird when you think about it. Like, they couldn't find one non-Asian in the whole... Like, they had to go all the way to Hank to get one.
I find it hilarious that the PGA is like, you need one. But then they already agreed to have the tournament there.
Maybe they didn't know at the time. I don't know. Then, like, when they started to look into it, they realized, oh... And so then they gave him that ultimatum.
But it's also hilarious, like, there is no subtlety in Khan. As soon as he finds out that this is his mission so he can join, he's just like you were saying, like, he's like, hole in one, hole in one.
Even though it wasn't a hole in one, because one, it was his second hit, and two, it didn't even go in. So, but yeah, he's... You could tell that Khan's just had an entire, you know, 180. He went from, oh, I hate you guys, to, oh, you're my best friend ever. So back at the club, you know, they're all sitting and drinking and stuff. And there's a subtle thing I noticed that maybe, you know, you have to, maybe you only have to watch it on a second or third watch or something. Like, almost all the wait staff and bartenders are white at the club, even though, like, all the members are Asian. So it's just kind of an interesting factoid there. Hank is happy because he's like, oh, thanks for, you know, going to the 7-Eleven to pick up my brand of beer. And Ted's like, oh, you know, this is the level of membership that we, or this is the member of service we give to our members. I guess this is our clumsy way of asking if you could join. And Hank's like, well, I'd love to, but I can never afford. And Ted's like, oh no, this is very competitive. What do you pay for? What do you pay at the public course? And he's like, $11. And our prices are competitive with that. But then Hank's still like, oh, but isn't this an all Oriental club? and then of course Ted like indirectly corrects him. It's like, all Asian? Well, no, I mean, not by design. See, the founder was a hot sauce tycoon. From Vietnam, so it's clearly like a reference to Sriracha, I believe, and it becomes even clearer that he's making the reference that way later in the show. Or I guess the in-universe version of Sriracha. But anyway, they're like, yeah, so he, you know, he moved here and he wasn't allowed to any country clubs, so we started to invite his friends, and they instead of their friends, and so it kind of accidentally became all Asian. And it's like, oh, so it's like a bowling night on Tuesdays with the locksmiths and whatnot. But Hank's still upset because he doesn't know anybody. But Khan says, oh, but you will make friends. You know, everybody comes from different backgrounds. Laos, Cambodia, South Korea, Vietnam, Thailand. But we're all here for our love of golf. And so, you know, I guess that turns Hank a little bit. We see at Khan's house, they're kind of standing and they're waiting because apparently, like, it's such a nice place that when you get your membership card, like, they actually come in person and deliver your membership to you at the door. And so they're looking for a black car, but they see one go by and it's like, oh, it's just a hearse. We're looking for a black Continental. That's where where Mr. Ho will be, and he'll come and he'll give us our membership. And, you know, it's all obviously dependent on Hank saying yes. And, you know, the car pulls up, so Hank must have said yes. And Hank's at his house, and Peggy's upset that they joined an all-Oriental club, her words. Which is kind of funny because, like, I think, granted, I don't know, when this was made back in 2000, I don't know if it was, like, common knowledge that it was not a proper term to use to describe Asians, but definitely nowadays we know that you don't describe Asian people as Oriental. Things can be Oriental, like a rug, but not people. But it is kind of funny. And then Hank's like, oh, but it's not about being Asian. It's about loving golf. And, you know, we've been invited to the special PGA dinner tomorrow. And Peggy's like, what I'm about to say might not be politically correct, but this whole thing seems off. So I guess Con managed to get Hank to join, which is something. You know, Hank pointed out that, one, it's probably too expensive, which obviously it is. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with country clubs, but they can be up there in price depending on where it is and what kind you join and who the membership's for. Like, if it's a solo membership versus like a family membership or something. So he's not wrong about that. Like, even in a small town, it's probably not going to be cost efficient.
I wonder, do you think they're going to kick him out after the PGA tournament?
Maybe. Oh, you know, that probably was their plan the whole time.
I don't know. I was just thinking about it right now.
I never really thought about it. They might, but I feel like they'd probably want to keep up appearances.
Just a year, I guess.
Yeah, like, they might keep, like, give him a year or two, and then, like, on renewal, they'll be like, oh, well, okay, we need you to start paying, and then he'll be like, oh, I can't afford that, and then he'll quit or whatever. Like, I think my guess is they figure the losing out whatever money it is to get Hank to join is, and yet all the prestige they'll get for hosting the PGA, it'll be worth it. That's my thought anyway.
I do think Hank is genuinely wanting to play golf there, though.
Yeah, he is. I agree. Well, they go to the dinner the next day, and everyone's just so interested to see Hank. Ted sees Peggy, and he's like, wow, Mrs. Hill, you are really hot. And Peggy's, you know, appreciative of it. They go to the ballroom, and Ted's like, if I had a daughter, this is where they would get married to your son. And as they're walking through the ballroom area, you know, Con is and Min are at a membership table, and Hank is like, oh, well, you know, I should be sitting there because I'm a new member too. And then Ted's like, oh, in a minute, I want to introduce you to some people from the PGA. And, you know, Hank jokes too. He's like, you know, I'm a member of the PGA as well, the Propane Gas Association. Because that's what I do for a living. I sell propane and propane accessories. And then Ted kind of half-heartedly laughs. They go up to the front, like on the dais of the of this dining room or whatever. And they introduce Hank to everybody there, like Mr. Ho and Mr. Tran, who's the founder. And Peggy's like, oh, you look much younger on the label. And he's like, there's a rooster on the label. And Ted's like, Oh, that's just a joke. You'll learn that the Hills have a wicked sense of humor. And then Mr. Tran's like, oh, ha, ha, ha. And then they introduce him to the people from the PGA, and they're like, you know, oh, you seem very down to earth, Mr. Hill, for a man of your wealth. And that kind of, you know, confuses Hank a little bit, understandably. And then Ted walks away. And he's like, well, where are you going to eat? He's like, oh, the dais is just reserved for special guests and new members. Like, but Con's a new member. So Hank's sitting up there, and everybody's kind of staring at them. And then Peggy's like, I think they think we're gods. And, yeah. And then they start this raffle to do a practice round of golf with Tiger Woods. And they spin the little bin and pull out a piece of paper, like, oh, Hank Hill's the winner. Mr. Hank Hill's the winner. And so he goes up to shake Mr. Tran's hand, and Hank puts his hand in the little tumbler bin, and he pulls out a bunch of pieces of paper. When he sits down, he looks through, and it's all like, Hank Hill, Hank Hill. And then one of them says, the white guy. So, yeah, I think at this point, Hank's finally realized what's going on.
The joke that I love, and I always try to retell this to people because it makes me laugh all the time, is that when Peggy says that you look younger than you do on the bottle, and he's like, there's a rooster on the bottle. I don't know why, when the first time I saw this episode, I cried laughing, and it still makes me laugh really hard. And it's hard to explain to people just this setup and this joke without watching the full episode. But I do. I do try to always tell people about Peggy's sriracha joke.
Yeah, so it's clear that they're making a sriracha reference, you know, Vietnamese immigrant hot sauce rooster on the bottle, but they never just come out and say it, maybe because they don't have the rights. I mean, I guess they got the rights to Wolf brand chili, but they didn't get the rights to sriracha, so. But yeah, it's a funny thing, because I think after all of this, Hank's really starting to realize something's awkward, like, why are we sitting at the dais with, like, the most important people here? Like, the PGA people, as well as the president of the club and the membership chair and everything. Whereas Con and Min are also new members and they're sitting down there. And, of course, Ted and Cindy are important people and they're sitting down on the ground. But, yeah, he's starting to feel it, figure it out, and then... You know, he kind of glances and he kind of sees that there's something weird about the papers. Like, he's seeing a lot of H's and L's and stuff. So he just grabs a bunch, and then that's when he realizes, oh, you know, there's something off here. And then, of course, you know, Hank's upset and he confronts Ted at the bar after the dinner, the bar at the country club, that is. And Ted's talking to the guys at the PGA. And Hank's like, oh, you know, you guys rigged this raffle. We could be thrown in jail. And, you know, Ted's a little concerned. And Ted's like, oh, no, don't worry. That's just a tradition. The new person always wins. Well, why didn't Con win? Why didn't Con get to sit in the dais? Why did I get roast beef and everybody else got eggplant? And, of course, the people at PGA are like, all right, is there a problem here? And then Ted takes Hank away and it's like, you know, Ted kind of lays it out and says, okay, the PGA said they were going to cancel the tournament if we couldn't attract one non-Asian to be a member. And then Hank's upset, like, oh, so you just liked me because of the color of my skin, not because of my jokes or my personality. And then Ted's like, it's not like you're not getting anything out of it. You got the clothes, you got the Golf with Tiger Woods, a $40,000 a year membership. And then Ted's like, look, I will admit that when I first met you, I wanted you to join because you were white. But as I got to know you, now I want you to stay as a friend. And then so Hank's like, I got one question. What accessories do I sell? and then Ted guesses tractors, which is kind of funny because, like, only but an hour or so beforehand, Hank does make that PGA joke about how he sells propane and propane accessories. So it shows that he wasn't even paying attention then. Like, it should be somewhat fresh in his memory. We go to Hank's house, and Hank talks to the guys, and he's like, yeah, I just couldn't stay there, even though it had the best zoysia grass. It didn't have you guys. Also, doesn't have the greatest kikuyu grass, which is, I guess, what they have. And then Dale also makes a comment that Hank used to sell tractors, so he was technically correct. And then Hank's like, well, yeah, but Ted didn't know that. And then Con comes out. He's angry because since Hank quit, Con lost his membership, and Hank's just like, you know, I just couldn't be there. I didn't belong. Excuse me. It's the same reason why I don't ball on Tuesdays. Like, you don't understand. And then Con, you know, just kind of lets it off and goes, oh, yeah, I feel so comfortable everywhere. My real name is Smith. I just changed the Super Nuisance phone when I moved to Texas. And that's when Hank kind of has a realization. We cut over to Con's house, and he's meditating, and Min's trying to help him forget about Nine Rivers. And he's just super upset. He kind of he halfly jokes. Like, I'm sure he's also being kind of serious, too, where he's like, oh, I should just leave you and marry somebody who's already a member. Then they hear a knock at the door. It's Hank. And at first, Con doesn't know what's going on. He's like, fine, you can play through. And then Hank's like, no, we got something to give you. And then Con's assuming that means he's going to beat him up or something. But then Hank gives them a Rainy Street Country Club golf shirt and invites them to join their country club where the dues are a six pack every 18 holes. And Con accepts it, but then he jokes about kicking Bill out, and then the episode ends. I think my favorite thing in this episode is the end when Hank realizes, I guess Hank has a realization of what it's like to be like Con, I guess, like in the sense that Con wants to be around Asians and whatnot, or be around people like him, because he doesn't necessarily feel comfortable because he's so different than everybody else in Texas, and he couldn't get in, and now he doesn't feel like he has a place where he belongs. And then Hank was in a place where he felt very uncomfortable and very out of place, he now understands how Con must feel and invites him to join their country club. I think, like, that's very heartwarming to me. It's not, you know, it's not like he solved racism or whatever, but it's also like, you know, he did a good thing. He helped somebody in need. He identified somebody who had a problem and helped them out.
I do mean Khan is not making it easy for him, though.
No. Hank is realizing that what makes Khan a lot of the way he is that he feels very out of place and uncomfortable. And I think his behavior is just him trying to overcompensate, I guess you could say, for it. Like, you know, sometimes I say, like with like narcissism, for example, people say like people who are actually narcissistic have actually really low self-esteem in real life because they think so low of themselves that the only way that they can feel good about themselves is to constantly pump themselves up and put other people down and whatnot. So I think Khan definitely fits into that bucket.
I do like he wants to kick Bill out, though. You know, you got to make it an exclusive club.
Well, it's only only five guys. That's pretty exclusive.
Yeah, but think about if there was one guy on the street that wasn't in the club.
That's true. Exclusive. You have a valid point. But yeah, I think it's still, to me, heartwarming. Like, it's not, obviously, it's not the most heartwarming thing to have ever happened, but it's still really nice.
Yeah, this is a great episode. I do love when everyone on the street really kind of comes together really nicely, and it always feels like Khan is trying to go against Rainy Street, or he wants to stand out, or like you said, he wants to feel better than them. But I love, there's always these moments where Khan is a part of this street, and like at the end of this one, they all come together, and it is lovely to see all five guys with Khan out there and doing their thing.
Yeah. And I alluded to it in the previous episode that one of my friends and I got into an argument, more like a discussion or debate about this episode. Because I guess, so my friend, he's half Korean, half white. And his argument was that the show, like one of the reasons he doesn't like King of the Hill, and in particular this episode, is he believes that it makes Asian people look bad. And granted, I'm not Asian, so I can't, you know, I'm not going to speak for what makes an Asian person feel good or bad about it. But like, to me, I felt like it didn't. Like, I don't think, I guess you could say, yes, it is an unfair stereotype that Asians are money chasing and whatnot. And that's exactly what Khan is. But I also think like Khan's supposed to be a deeper character like that. Like the reason, because it comes up in many episodes, the reason he behaves that way is because he just doesn't feel like he's supposed to be. He feels like he's supposed to be better. And then he also makes like a reference at one episode or two episodes actually about how he is Asian and people expect things out of him and for him to be a certain way and whatnot. And I guess that stress pushes him. So I don't know that necessarily makes Asians look bad, but I mean, also there's, you know, I think it just happens to be the way it worked out for this episode because they have Khan as a neighbor. But there's also, I think, there's like an old Jeffersons episode where George is invited to an all-white country club for largely the same reason, because they need to attract one non-white member. So I feel like they were just trying to do that. It wound up being a learning episode or a learning thing for Hank, because Hank's never really been in a position where he didn't belong or he didn't blend in. He almost is always in a position. I mean, he's lived in the same town pretty much his whole life. So I think that was the first time he ever been in a position where he was incredibly uncomfortable and wound up learning it took that for him to learn what it was like to be like Khan. And at the end, he learns a lesson. He learns a valuable lesson and he becomes more inclusive towards Khan.
Yeah, I mean, as a half Korean, half Hispanic, I don't find this offensive. I can only speak for myself, though. Again, I do think sometimes, like, I don't know. I think maybe we don't look at it as, like, a full race thing. It's just like, this is Khan and this is Ted. Like, these are the people. Like, I'm sure if you hang around your community, you find people who have these traits. But I don't think it makes them necessarily like bad people. We see like Khan has such a like, I don't know, a heart at the end.
Yeah.
And see his struggles. And it's like, these are just real people, real things, real problems, I guess. Yeah, I find this episode hilarious. Like I said, I love Peggy's sriracha joke.
Yeah, I think it's more of a commentary on how like upper class people tend to treat lower class people versus like an Asian versus white thing. I think just the Asian thing was largely because it made it like clear that there was a line of delineation. It was a chance to turn Hank into the token so that he could understand firsthand what it was like to feel excluded or included, but for all the wrong reasons or whatever. So, you know, he finally, I think it took that for him to finally understand what it was like. And then when Khan mentioned, oh yeah, I feel comfortable everywhere I go. My actual last name is Smith. And I think that's when Hank kind of realized, oh yeah, this is like, I only had to deal with that for like 3 days or whatever. And this is like Khan's life. So let's include him into our club. We can't do anything to get him into Nine Rivers, but we can give him into our club.
Yeah. Still one of my favorite episodes. Definitely worth a rewatch.
Yeah, this has always been one of my favorites just because I also just the ridiculousness of it, just because granted, we don't know where Arlen is. Arlen could very well be like next to Houston. I don't think it is because there's an episode where they say it's a 3-hour drive to Houston. You know, if it's next to Houston, there's a really large Asian population there. Or even if it's next to Dallas, San Antonio and Austin, not so much. I'm just like, this small rural county has enough upper class Asians for that matter. Like, you know, you already have like a small demographic. Now you have to make it even smaller, like the type of people who can afford a $40,000 a year membership fee. You know, like just to me, it's just ridiculous. Like that would not exist in real life because they wouldn't have that. Like they'd have like 10 members if it were real with just the way the demographics are. And this is like in 2000. I mean, obviously the demographics are a little different now. In Texas, I think Asians are like the fastest growing racial group, if not mistaken. But yeah. Yeah, ultimately, I do like it as an episode, like because I do think it finally gives Hank like insight onto what it's like to be the outsider. And, you know, it can work both ways. Sometimes you're the outsider and you're shunned because you're different. And then sometimes you become a token and neither one's great because you just want to be accepted for you. And that's kind of what Hank realized. Like, I want people to just like me because I'm me. And I don't want people to like me because I'm white or whatever.
True. True.
But yeah, it is still one of my favorite episodes. I could watch this like later. Like I could watch this over and over again. I won't because that will be taking away from you guys being able to hear some more podcasts on more episodes. Like next week we are doing Red Corn Gambles with This Future, which is a much later episode. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I want to say it's like either season 10 or season 11. But yeah, we will be handling that one next. And that one, as you can guess from the title, is a very John Redcorn heavy episode. And while I don't like a lot of the later episodes, this one I actually like a lot and has some of my favorite quotable lines, so I'm looking forward to doing that. Do you have anything else, Jimmy?
No, I just, you know, rewatch this episode if you haven't watched it. Rewatch it if you have. It's a great one. And next week, it definitely is one of my favorites. All 50 of these are my favorites, guys. So just,
yes,
that's my line. They're all my favorites.
Absolutely. Well, until next week, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.